Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Today's interview is with a friend of mine that I've had on a few times before and someone I've gotten to know very well since 2020 during the pandemic when he and I met through our shared advocacy when we both had family members who died contracting COVID in their respective nursing homes. Assemblyman Ron Kim is the first and only Korean-American ever elected to the New York State Legislature that has represented the 40th Assembly District since 2016. Ron is a Democrat that, despite backlash, went up against his own party and powerful leaders to criticize then-Governor Andrew Cuomo about his deadly order forcing thousands of COVID-positive patients into nursing homes. He joined forces with many Republican leaders across the aisle to sponsor a bill for a bipartisan investigation with subpoena power to find out the truth of what happened to over 15,000 seniors that lost their lives from COVID in their elder care facilities. And he has not given up that fight. Not only that, but Ron is using his position to help improve conditions in nursing homes to help our elderly residents by coming up with new ways to monitor the health and well-being of our seniors, which you will hear about in our conversation. Ron also talks about the death of his beloved dad and the process of grieving, which I don't think we talk enough about. A beautiful interview with a really good human being. Here is Assemblyman and Chair of the Committee on Aging in New York, and my friend, Ron Kim. Ron Kim, thank you so much for being on the Dean's List again.
Janice, it's always good to be back. You're doing so much. You're hanging out with Marky Mark, Mark Wahlberg. I saw you on social media. Now you got to talk to a local political guy again. I don't know how you talk. You know, I don't know how you hang out with Marky Mark and the next day you hang out with me. So,
well, that's funny. I did see your little like on social media yesterday. We're recording this on Thursday. We had Mark Wahlberg on Fox and Friends. And, you know, we meet celebrities occasionally here on the channel. And some of them, you know, they kind of have their handlers and they come in. You don't typically get to spend time with them. But I was impressed with Mark Wahlberg because he took the time to not only talk to us as hosts, but people were coming in to see if they could try to get a picture with him. And he took the time to do that. And so I think it's really important to sort of give those people a shout out because you know, it can be kind of a fickle place, Hollywood. But you know what? You're always my number one celebrity spotting.
Thanks, Janice. You're my number one, too.
Well, listen, I wanted to have you on for a number of reasons, but first I wanted to talk about something that happened very recently. An elderly, cancer-stricken man from New York City was saved by an AI device after he suffered from food poisoning while home alone. And I read the story, and then I see your smiling face next to him because you helped save this man's life. Tell me about the device and how we can get it into more homes.
Yeah, it's an AI-driven device, kind of like a customized Alexa for older adults, which was launched in South Korea a few years ago after a scandal over there when an older person passed away at his home and no one found the person for almost 3 weeks. He was living by himself, isolated, and no one found the body for 3 weeks. Became a national scandal. And over there, they directed some of the best tech companies to work with the local government to find a solution here for older adults that are vulnerable, living by themselves in isolated places. And of course, over here, we have so many people in similar categories. So we decided to launch a pilot similar to what they did over here, over there. And we administer about 200 up to 200 devices. I think 100 actually has gone out so far. We're waiting for the 100, other 100 to go out. But what it does is it fills the gaps when home care workers, nurses, they can't be there all the time. But we have a very fun, easy to use tech where older adults can engage, talk to, play music. But at the same time, the machine learning behind the device alerts the central database if something is wrong. All of a sudden, the pattern is off. The person's not playing music. The person is using triggering words identified by the device. If something is wrong, he's anxious, he has anxiety, he's depressed. That it alerts the central person to check in with the older adult to see how you're doing. And that's exactly what happened with this case. The person usually plays a lot of happy music, and all of a sudden he's going dark. So the device alerted the central social worker to check in on him. And then when he did, he was suffering, almost unconscious, barely, and couldn't call 911 because he was on the floor. And that's how we were able to intervene and call 911 and get him the treatment that he needed to live.
That is amazing. You know, something as simple as like an Alexa device in a home where an elderly person lives. I read this story. My mom is 81 years old. She lives by herself. And I'm thinking to myself, where can I get one of these? So how can we as a population try to do these kinds of things to help our elderly?
Yeah, it doesn't cost that much. We were able to secure some funding last year for a pilot in my borough, Queens, but we want to scale this up for a statewide program. So I'll definitely follow up with you, Janice, and we'll try to get a device for your mom as soon as possible. But we want every older adult living by themselves to have not only this tool, but other type of tools that doesn't cost the state that much money, but it allows the caregivers, the social workers, the nurses that can't be there all the time to efficiently and effectively interact and monitor with their patients when they're not there.
Mm-hmm. What was it like meeting the man that really was saved by this device? What was it? You know, did he thank you? Was it a really kind of a fun moment, a moment that you, you know, that you really felt like you were doing something for the community?
Yeah, no, it definitely felt great, especially at a time when everyone is writing just negative stories around technology and AI and all these other things. And it's all how we design things, right? Mm. Humans design the technology. And if we design technology to do good things, that's what technology will do. And we're showing that. Like if you're designing AI to exploit children playing on, you know, social media, that's what they'll do, right? But if we design the machine to actually assist older adults and vulnerable people so we can, as caregivers, do a better job, that's what the machine will do. And the person was so grateful, and all he asked for was for other people, his friends, who don't have the device, to have an opportunity to get it. At the same time, you know, it was a touching feeling because, you know, he's an elderly man. He's also suffering from cancer. And as you know, I lost my dad to cancer recently. So it was a touching moment for me that here's another person in my community going through similar problems and challenges, but living by himself because for whatever reason, right? Like his family, I don't want to dive into how he got there, but you know, his family's not near him. So imagine going through all the chemo and the drugs and managing the medication, and you don't have your loved ones anywhere near you. And so to me, it was both inspiring and also kind of emotional at the same time. And I felt a deeper purpose that there, as long as there are the people like him and out there, I want to do a better job of reaching out to them.
Such a beautiful way to think about it. You know, tell me about your dad. You know, you lost him a few weeks ago. What a fighter, though, Ron. I mean, you know, you and I have known each other for a long time now, and we would talk, and you would say he wasn't doing very well, and you would go through the motions of trying to say goodbye and bringing your girls, and he would fight back. And that happened so many times. And then, you know, tell me about the moment when you told your dad it was okay to let go.
I mean, last year or so is exceptionally tough. I'm the only child. I was his main caregiver, and like you said, we went through so many ups and downs, and I've said goodbye to him. I feel like so many times, every time he's gone to the ER for different reasons, I thought that we lost him. And on Christmas Day, he ended up getting intubated because there was excessive bleeding. He was coughing up a lot of blood, and I brought him to the ER, and I was going back to my family. And literally 30 minutes later, they're calling me back in and saying, "Okay, I think we need to intubate him to figure out what's wrong with them, where the bleeding is coming from." And as you know, when people are intubated, it's very hard, especially at this kind of stage, for them to come out of it. So we were kind of going through that emotion with them, and I'm talking to him, and the last thing he did before he went under was give me a pound fist and said, "I got this. I'm gonna fight. Be okay. I'll see you again soon." So I'm going home again, and then I get called back an hour later because he's having this on Christmas Day, after Christmas, he was going through this heart failure, right? And while he was intubated, he was getting a cardiovascular attack, a heart attack almost. And so I thought this was it. So I'm in this specialized room, FaceTiming his sister from Korea to say goodbye, and calling his closest Marine buddies who've been close to him to let them know that this might be it. And then 2 days later, he wakes up. he told, and we thought that we lost him, but he woke up. He came back to us. And he was, I think the first thing he said to me was, "I came back for you." I was there when he woke up, and it was like, "I'm here for you." And at that point, I just had to let him know because he was suffering so much, and cancer was spreading everywhere. And the last time he did chemo, coming out of chemo, he fell. It wasn't. It was at that point with the oncologist. Everyone knew that this was. There's no point of going to chemo. Even it's just not worth his time. And I had to just let him know that, if you want to fight, if you want to live, and see another day with us, I'll support you all the way. But if it's for me and you think you need to protect me, you don't need to do that anymore. And you can let go. And it's okay. Like, I'm fine. And I think for him, he was extremely worried because I don't have any siblings. And despite me, being a 44-year-old man, I think as a parent, you can never feel less protected of your son or of your child. And that's how he felt at the end, that he didn't want to leave me behind in an isolated, lonely life. And I had to remind him that, no, that's not it, and I might not have siblings, but I have friends and families and a beautiful family with three young daughters, and we'll be fine.
It was a beautiful ceremony. There wasn't a dry eye in the house. I felt like you had so much love and support, not only from your friends and your family, but the community that came out to support you. It must have felt, I don't know, you're saying goodbye to your father, your friends and family are around you. Are you able to sort of take stock at all of these people who love and care for you as well? In that moment, because I felt such love in that room for you.
Absolutely, and thank you and Sean for being there. I think that's the type of a farewell that my dad wanted. You know, he was, like I said in my eulogy, he was a gregarious man. He was outgoing, and even though the decisions he's made for us in his life was to live this kind of isolated, lonely life at the end, but every step of the way, he yearned for more socializing, more friends, more community. But sometimes you don't end up with what you truly desire. And that's what happened to my dad and many others like him, because the sacrifices we make for the next generation. And that's what America, is really about, right? Always the previous generation making sacrifices so the next generation can do a little better and work harder. And that's exactly what he did. And at the end, I wanted to give him the kind of gregarious, welcoming community that could send him off in the way that he would have wanted. And that's definitely, we've definitely felt that. And for me, I think it's a process. I'm finally taking a little time off with my family, with my girls, to kind of put the phone down and really reset as a family and as a unit, because I do notice that my younger ones have been reacting, you know, in their own weird way, because they're still processing, especially my youngest, the one in kindergarten, following these events. Because she felt so close to him, I think she was lashing out in school and she's doing bad things. And I think all children, at the end of the day, they do these things because they want and desire attention. And oftentimes we can't give them the kind of attention that they deserve in this moment. So I think it's critical for us to kind of pause and take time for the family. And that's what we plan on doing.
Mm-hmm. I feel like
coming days.
I love that advice, because I feel like we don't talk about the process of grief enough, and what it does to us individually, right? And children, you know, you and I, our grief brought us together. You remember when my kids lost both of their grandparents in a very short period of time, they both dealt with it in different ways. And my youngest, I think, had the hardest time, and it just manifested itself in different ways, and you don't realize at the time that that is just part of the process. So I love that you are taking a beat, and I do appreciate you getting on the phone and on the microphone with me, because I know that this is taking time out of your precious family time. So I am very grateful, and I hope that they're okay. But one thing that I do know is that you are a wonderful father, and they are so lucky to have you and your wife. So just know that I see such a tremendous family unit in you guys, and they're going to be just fine. Don't go anywhere. We'll have more of the Janis Dean podcast right after this.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network. Stay on top of the latest news and information from Fox News. Listen and download the Fox News Hourly Update on your time. The trending stories you need anytime you want it. Listen and download now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com.
Let's talk a little bit about, you know, the nursing home thing. I know a lot of people are like, oh, here we go again. Here she goes again on her soapbox with the nursing home thing. Well, the thing is, we're never giving up. I don't care if it's 4 years from now, 10 years from now, 2 decades from now. We're still fighting, you know, even though it's kind of behind the scenes, it's not in the headlines as much as it used to be. You know, the former governor is still trying to come back like a groundhog and pop his head up and say, here I am. Is it, you know, 6 more weeks of my career? But there are things happening in Albany, and there is a bill out that I want to talk to you about that's being sponsored by some of your colleagues about an independent bipartisan investigation. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, I think it's similarly modeled after some of the federal way of investigating the COVID response. And It's definitely aligned with what we, you and I, along with the Republican senators, launched a couple years ago, right? You went up there to talk about the Independent Bipartisan Commission. But the way that I think it's evolved now, because Albany is run by a Democratic Senate and a Democratic Assembly, we needed the Democratic conferences to get behind an independent COVID investigation. And then, so that's the product after a couple of years that we have introduced. So I support it. But when we launched our call for a bipartisan independent, I felt that it was important to have both Republicans and Democrats standing together. And that's why we had a Republican sponsor in the Senate and me as a Democrat leading the way in the Assembly. But that's not how Albany works. Mm. It has to be led by the party that's leading the conferences. So doesn't matter how we get there for me. You know, we could have, even if we started and someone else finishes the job. So I support it as long as we get to the outcome that we want. And I think this, you know, piece of legislation to calling for an independent COVID response that broadens not just the nursing home, but other aspects of how we dealt with COVID is the right way to do it. And I don't know how receptive the governor will be, because she's already spent some money on the outside contracts to do all this work. So if I were her, that's probably how I would respond to any of this, saying, I already did this. I already spent the money. But yet, we don't have anything that came out of it either.
Yep.
Yeah. So I think, you know, we can introduce legislation again and we can push it. But at the end of the day, it's always about the administration, right? We pass 5,000 bills every year as a legislature. And I would say 90 to 95% don't get enforced or administered properly. And I'm not blaming just this one governor. This is about like years and years of declining administrative public capacity to actually enforce the laws that we pass. So I think we still have a long ways before we can actually get the kind of accountability that you and I have been fighting for. But like you said earlier, we can't give up, because our very core democracy depends on your work and what we're doing. Because without accountability, all we have is authoritarianism and fascism and communism. That's where we're going to go, because our democracy works when people are held accountable, powerful people are held accountable.
Why do you still do it? Why? I'm grateful that you are still in leadership and, you know, get up every day and want to do great things. I mean, this device that saved this one man's life, you know, it's an impact, right? It's, you see the work that you have done today with a story like the one we just talked about with the device. Is that what keeps you going? Is things like that, bringing in a simple device that could save one person's life? I mean, what does it mean to you?
I'm very grateful for the position I have, because there were times when I wanted to, and I've spoken to you this privately, that I wanted to give up and tap out. It was too much. I lost three loved ones in 3 years. I'm down to by myself and my wife. There's a lot. I needed time for myself. But at the same time, I found new purpose in the privileged position that I am in. And I've turned, just like you and others, I was able to turn some of my pains and traumas into a purpose. And not many people have that opportunity. So I feel very grateful and privileged. Most people in our positions have given up. And most people do feel morally injured by the government, by the politicians, by the system. And that's what, so that's the tensions and all the ugliness and hatred that we see on both sides of the political parties everywhere. And I'm driven because I know that if we do a little bit more, if we fix this problem, this country is designed to be much better than this. This country is supposed to have be filled with hardworking, happy people that, you know, even at the end of their loved one's life, feels confident that, hey, our government did everything to give my grandfather, my father, my mother the dignity that they deserve at the end of their life. But right now, we're not there. So many people feel morally injured, so they're just giving up and feeling unproductive. They don't want to go back to their jobs. They don't want to make money. And as long as we have that, this country is not going to work. Maybe we won't have an economy that works. So that's what drives me, Janice, because there's a larger mission here to save our state and save this country. And your work, I just hope that at some point, an economist, someone who's at the elitist schools out there, will go back in time and really see the value of the work that you put in to really save this country from the bottom up.
Mm. Well, I love you, my friend. I think you are just such a good human, and I feel so grateful that I know you. And I'm glad that you're taking a time out with your family. I know your dad was so proud of you. You are an example of the American dream that we all strive for. You know, your family came to this country for a better life. And here you are, you know, trying to work for the everyday man and woman who are struggling, who are trying to get through day by day after a once-in-a-lifetime pandemic. And I, for one, am so grateful for your work. And I just want, you know, to you to take care of yourself and your family, but to get up and fight another day, because I know that's exactly the way your dad would want you to continue on.
Thank you, Janice, and I appreciate you so much. And I appreciate being on the Dean's List. I feel like I should get a PhD now. An honorary PhD from Dean's List.
You're already there, my friend. Yeah. Right. So thank you so much. Love to the family, and God bless you. And we'll talk real soon.
Thank you.
Thanks again to Ron Kim for joining us today. And you can tell how hard it is for him to talk about his father and his grief, which is so raw. But I'm grateful he did come on today. And I feel so blessed to know him. In a time when this country is so divisive and people are at odds with one another, Ron is a very good example of a man who is trying to do his job to help others and to change things for the future. Thank you to all of my listeners. If you have someone you think should make the Dean's List, let me know at Janice Dean on Twitter or Janice Dean FNC on Instagram, or you can rate this podcast. Please subscribe, rate, and review to this podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or at foxnewspodcast.com. Listen ad-free with a Fox News Podcast Plus subscription on Apple Podcasts. And Amazon Prime members can listen to this show ad-free on the Amazon Music app. And don't forget to spread the sunshine.
It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.